All right, welcome back to episode 22, Sports Talk for Fans by Fans. This is our NFL segment, so made it through 22 episodes, kind of crazy. Before we start, just remember Facebook page, follow the group and the page on the group. We talk and post things with you guys and post questions and polls and try to do updates on what's going on in the world of sports. So please feel free to join those, join in the conversation, appreciate it. And I got Alex here with me to help me talk NFL. How are you doing, Alex?
Doing fantastic. That we're getting closer and closer to the season. We're less than 60 days for the first Hall of Fame game, so I'm getting there, man. I'm getting pumped.
So what, 60 for the first preseason, and what, like 90 for the first regular season, right?
It's like I think it's the 5th of August, so it's the first week of August, so we're less than 60 days away.
Can't wait. All right. It's good to have something to look forward to, which is kind of crazy because we've got NFL or NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, College World Series or baseball, MLB, amid all the cheating, quote unquote, by the pitchers, Olympic qualifications, Euro, like soccer qualifications. We have all this stuff going on in sports, and here we are 90 days out talking about football. So I love it. Let's get right into this. What we're going to do today is we're going to talk about some of the NFL news and rumors that we got going on recently since our last episode. And we will kind of, what me and Alex want to do, I think, is finish out our draft stuff we were talking about, which I think has been a couple episodes. But last time we talked to NFC, this time we want to do the AFC one. What we want to talk about is kind of the two-year layout of what teams have done with their high value picks and kind of how it's turned out and what we think is working, what's not working, and, you know, maybe they should have done something different. So we're going to go back and look at the past 2 years for NFL. So first things first, Alex, getting some NFL news and rumors. We're going to get right into this. I know we've talked about this here and there before, but is it time for the Packers fans to start to panic, Alex? We have some information about what Rodgers didn't go up to the mini camps, whatever, and it's been Jordan Love taking all the first team reps. And it seems like he's standing his ground. He doesn't like the way front offices kind of going about their business. So is it time for Packers fans to panic?
I think it's time for them to worry. If you asked me a week ago, I would say, oh, you're in good standing. But there's a couple of things that happened since then. One, your president of your football team basically came out and insulted your quarterback again, calling him a difficult fellow. So that didn't help them at all. Obviously, we're not at the crucial part of time because training camp hasn't fully started. Even the season hasn't fully started. You're really just in for the season. But then when you're hearing reports about Jordan Love struggling against air in practice, it starts to make you feel a little worried. You now know that, you know, maybe if things go bad, you probably don't have a quarterback at all. So you're not at the crazy lose your mind point, but you should be at the worry panic part right now because it started getting close to cutting time. And if, you know, maybe you could get through preseason and still have a pushback, but when the regular season starts and you got to start playing teams, that's the one where you got to go, okay, it's near time. Okay, we got to get this taken care of.
And I think what is it next in July? Is that the training camps that are coming up?
Yes, I think there's maybe one more little OTA before that, and then they break to mid-July, and then mid-late July. That's when they do the training camp, full training camp.
Yeah, I think middle of July is when we're going to actually for sure kind of increase the DEFCON and a level of panic on Aaron Rodgers, because right now we're at the the worry stage. It's gone from rumors to worries, in my opinion, and to the point where we've had to bring in James Jones, one of the wide receivers formerly for Aaron Rodgers, and he's been asked questions about it. So I, you know, the longer this goes on, I think the more worrisome this becomes for Packers fans, and maybe not just Packers fans. I think we can expand this to fantasy football owners, because if you have Aaron Rodgers as a keeper, you plan on, you know, getting him. I mean, he just came off of a phenomenal MVP season. So I think, you know, there's maybe some time to start worrying a little bit, but I guess I think we'll see the next time we talk about this, maybe in July, will be kind of indicator of what's going to happen next. So that's Aaron Rodgers' quick update on that one. So let's move on to the next one. The Julio Jones trade, it's been about a week since it's happened. I think we've had time to let it settle in. I think we weren't really tracking them as much because of the money they had to free up for Julio. But Alex, did you have the money on who freed it up and how they freed that money up for the Titans?
Tannehill had to restructure his contract. I don't remember the exact number in front of me, but he had to restructure his contract to get the money so they could actually get Julio on the contract.
Yeah, so, you know, it's smart. Because if they didn't make this move, that offense is literally Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown, nothing else. They lost their tight ends. They lost Adam Humphries, lost Corey Davis. They're down to one weapon, so they really could have keyed on stacking the box and probably double covering A.J. Brown and whatever else happens. So it's kind of a must trade for the Titans if you look at it from that perspective. Now, what I'm going to talk about is kind of Julio Jones and the fantasy football perspective, Alex. I'm just going to list out that I don't think he's going to be a top 15 wide receiver in fantasy football. Do you think that's crazy?
No, I do not. Just based off the offense he's in. No, I do not.
Yeah, and so I think a lot of people just are holding on to the fact that it's Julio Jones and they see those keywords, you know, the keywords where he wants a quarterback with a big arm. Oh yeah, he's going to go get those deep ball passes. And I don't think it's as easy as that. So kind of digging into last year, some things I want to throw out there for guys that are thinking about Julio Jones with a high pick or, you know, that think he's still a top five wide receiver, a fringe top wide five receiver. Ryan Tannehill, you know, we give him a lot of credit. I think he's not a game manager, but he's above a game manager. But I, you know, he's not an elite quarterback. So it's all really the Derrick Henry show. So Tannehill last year had only five games of more than three passing touchdowns or more. So he only had five games out of the 16-game season. He only had three games of more than 300 yards passing. So that right there is the limitations of the passing game the Titans have. Corey Davis last year, who Julio Jones is replacing, had only four games of more than 10 targets. Not 10 catches, 10 targets. In that same span, A.J. Brown only had one game of more than 10 targets. So where is Julio Jones going to get the ball? So it's going to come down to creating after the catch. So how many games did Corey Davis have more than 20 fantasy points? Because to me, I think 15, 20 fantasy points, that's like you have a great wide receiver. So how many games did Corey Davis have for more than 20 fantasy points? He only had three games of more than 20.
That's insane.
The games, yeah, and those games that A.J. Brown went off, Corey Davis didn't go off. So there's not games where the two of them both went off. So the games where they had 20 more fantasy points were not the same week. A.J. Brown only had six games of more than 20 fantasy points. So that's kind of crazy. He had one game with more than 10 targets, but he had six games with more than 20 fantasy points. So what does that mean? That means that A.J. Brown is a yak monster. He's catching those slants and he's going for big yards. You know, I think we think vintage Julio Jones, we think the same thing. But 32-year-old Julio Jones, hamstring problems. I know people want to talk about how Julio chose not to play last year. He didn't play week three. He didn't play week five. He didn't play week 10. I think those are the weeks he didn't play until he was shut down. So he didn't, it's not like he had a healthy year where he chose to play all these games and then get shut down. He had throughout the season, this constant every other game thing going on. So the people that say that, hey, I think he quit. I think he gave up. I have a hard time believing someone like Julio Jones just quit and gave up and just allowed the injury to affect him. I think he was actually injured because in the past, Alex, I don't think we've ever seen Julio Jones take a game off and come back. I think he's played through all these things until he had to get shut down. So, you know, that's everything I looked into. I have a hard time just believing Julio Jones is going to be a top 15 wide receiver because of all those things. So what do you think about that during all those numbers and facts that you?
I don't think so. I agree with you from the simple fact that the type of offense they're in, they want to run the ball with Derrick Henry. If they try not to run the ball with Derrick Henry and try to, you know, run the offense like they're the Kansas City Chiefs or anything like that, they're not going to win many games. Their defense is still suspect. You know, they haven't really upgraded that. They actually have lost some secondary players. They lost both their starting corners. They really haven't been able to recoup that. They weren't great at pass rushing. So their defense is going to be really bad next year. And the only way you can put points up is with offense. And to me, yeah, Julio's going to help them out, stretch the field a little bit. But if they think they're going to not run the ball with Derrick Henry and we're going to throw, let's say, 10 more times instead of running the ball. That's the difference for them between winning and losing. They're just not built for that right now. They got the offensive line to do it, but I just don't see Tannehill being like he's, you know, he could drop back 40, 50 times and win a game for them. They got to play ball control. So I don't see Julio getting a lot of balls. And if it does come to the down that Julio gets balls, guess what? That's taking balls out of Adrian Brown's hand. And he's your young up and coming stud. You don't want to do that, you know? And one of the, I think the sneaky things we're talking about the money, Brian, when you're talking about trading for Julio Jones, one of the things everyone's talking about is you were going to probably get a contract extension from Julio, you know, to get him under the cap. But they traded for him and they redid Tannehill's deal. And it seems like they're going to have Julio play on that deal. So I don't know if this deal is something where we're going to be looking at 3 or 4 years from now and Julio's still there. So he might be on kind of a, like, we'll see type of deal, you know?
Yep. And, you know, and I think with what you're talking about the defense, yeah, I think Mike Vrabel's smart enough where he knows that how do you help a bad defense? Running game, which is exactly what they have. So you control the running game, help your defense out. So I don't think they're a team that's going to get in shootouts because of that reason, because they have such a dominant running game. But yeah, the money situation is going to be interesting because Julio doesn't have a new contract yet, right, Alex? He's still on his current contract. So if they're pushing money back on Tannehill, you know, they have a couple other people with escalating contracts. I think Taylor Lewan, I think Derrick Henry, their contracts just increase. You know, in a couple of years, Caleb Farley, if he's a great first rounder, he's going to need a new contract. So if they give Julio a contract where Julio wants to be paid like number one, on top of A.J. Brown's going to need a new contract in, I think, 2 years, that's a lot of money tied into certain these people. So that could be a big problem for the Titans here in a couple of years, depending on how they eat.
Yeah, and that's kind of the important thing when you look at the fact that A.J. Brown was drafted in the second round. He drafted in the first round. You can maybe get that fifth-year deal, but because he's in the fourth round, he's going to hit free agency a lot sooner than he should.
Yeah, exactly. So those, if you're not tracking, the only people that get those fifth year are first round picks. So that's 1 year quicker that you have to pay him big money. So speaking of that, that's a great point you brought up. I want to talk about someone that's in this situation. We got Jamal Adams, who's currently in this quote unquote holdout situation. And if you guys listen to this, you know how much I love bashing Jamal Adams every chance I get. So his current situation, he's on a fifth-year option. He's in his fifth-year option game, paid $9 million something dollars, I believe, on his fifth-year option. Obviously, the Seahawks had to do that because they gave up, you know, two first-round picks. They fully invested in this pass-rushing safety, whatever. The thing that I think I just don't understand is you can't negotiate a fifth-year contract. Why would you hold out now to try to get the big contract? Because you don't get it this year. You get it on year six after this year's over. So, Alex, if he gets his contract now, that means he's 1 year quicker into someone else resetting the safety value market. So I think I'm just kind of confused on what he's doing, because if he waits his contract out, he finishes his fifth-year option. He goes to be a free agent, quote-unquote a free agent, even if he wants to stay in Seattle. He uses the leverage of everyone in the NFL against the Seahawks to get the money he wants. But instead, he's going to set the free agent market a year early and kind of screw himself up. So I just kind of question. I don't understand what he's doing. Alex, can you make sense of it?
I don't know. I know me personally, if you're a player, you wanted that you know, that under feeling that you're going to be taken care of security. I don't know why they didn't take care of it when they traded for him. If it was just only about that, you know, security, you could have did it when you got traded for. But he told the team he was willing to wait, and it made sense. Just like it says, like, okay, we're just going to wait. Like, for instance, Marcus May for the Jets, he got franchise tag. So he technically get a deal before July 15th, which is the franchise tag window. He can get a contract, especially the Jets right now. They got plenty of money, especially since they – redid Crowder's deal. So they got the money to sign Marcus May, so they could break the bank on him any moment. So to me, it would behoove him, especially Adams, to just wait maybe a couple of months, maybe wait a little while to see, hey, what Marcus May might get if he gets that contract. And it's a huge contract. Say, hey, man, I'm better than Marcus May in the Seattle's world, because obviously they signed Jamal Adams to trade for him. Does they need a pass rush and decide to drag, you know, get a box safety. But that's a whole nother thing. But yeah, I mean, I just, you know, any, I mean, Jamal Adams' decision to do this, I mean, it makes sense, but it also doesn't make sense from the simple fact that you were holding out for the Jets to get traded to go to Seattle for a contract that you didn't hold out, that you didn't get. Now we're a little later in the process now. You might as well just wait a couple of months and just wait till you know, the safety market gets reset. Then you just go be the highest paid safety like you originally wanted. But that's what happens when you do crazy moves like this. And I thank God that old crazy Jerry Jones didn't do this crazy move, because Dallas would be in this exact situation of trading two first round picks, two quality players, for someone like Jamal Adams. And to me, I think that's way more than he was worth. He's a good player, but that's not what he's worth. And now you don't have two players, and now your player that you traded for is holding out, and now you're in this situation. So thank you, Seattle, for helping us Cowboy fans out.
And it's so weird to see, like, Jalen Ramsey getting two first round picks. I think I understand that, because I think shutting down a whole side of the field makes sense. Two first round picks from Jamal Adams will still confuse me. I don't care if they're end of the first round picks. But if you look at that compared to DeAndre Hopkins, compared to Stephon Diggs, you know, Stephon Diggs was one first round pick. Yeah, I would, in a heartbeat, one first round pick for Stephon Diggs. Yes. Two first round picks for almost anyone else. It's just weird to me. I don't get that. So, you know, Seahawks are fully invested. They're going to probably make him the highest paid safety, which, cool. I guess that works for you guys, but I just don't understand it. But they're too far in. They have to do it now, because now they look stupid if they don't.
Yeah, it's just like the Cowboys traded for Amari Cooper a couple of years ago, and they were about to let Amari Cooper walk. They gave up a first round pick. You're not gonna let that guy walk. You just gave up assets for it. It's like Jamal Adams right now. You traded two first round picks for me, and you're gonna not pay me. Then I'm gonna walk into free agency, and yeah, you'll get a comp pick, but you gave up two first round picks, and you're gonna get a third round pick back. Like, that's not even worth it. So they know they got he's got him over the barrel, but like I said, we were talking about, like, you might as well wait a couple of months. Then you can see what the new market is once somebody gets signed. Then you can go and do that. But you know, it is a weird situation on both sides. So I guess it's a match made in heaven, Brian.
Yeah, that's fine. Let him stay in Seattle. As a Niners fan, I'm not actually scared of him. So, works for me. I wasn't going to talk Jameson Crowder, but I think you mentioned Jameson Crowder or Jet something recently. So, just really quickly, let's talk that one out really quickly, Alex. Jameson Crowder is supposed to get paid $10 million this year. Jets want him to take a pay cut. Jets have like something like 38 to 40 something or 60 million in cap space, but they want him to take a pay cut, because they have quote unquote wide receivers. Did you think that was weird also when you saw that?
You know, I thought it was first weird at the first part of it, but then I started thinking to myself, it's been a long time talking about this player, but maybe they might be in the Richard Sherman series. Maybe they want to take a little money because they were planning on signing a couple other veteran players. Maybe Richard Sherman's in play. Maybe they're still trying to save money for next year and say, hey, let's save a little bit of money, and then we can also go out and get Richard Sherman. That's the only thing I could think about. That's kind of the shine in the dark ballpark. I understand, like, hey, you got wide receivers, you got the, you know, and definitely with the situation in the NFL where everyone doesn't have money, yeah, you could definitely, you know, push them to the brink and say, hey, if you don't take this contract cut, we're going to cut you, and you're not going to have anybody's going to pay you anywhere close to what we're paying. You know, I understand that if your tag gets a cap, but I mean, they just got so much money right now. They need talent. They don't need cap space. They need talent. So it was a head scratcher to me, unless they're going out to get Richard Sherman or something.
I'm still Richard Sherman is going to get, he's going to be less than $10 million a year. They have 27 million, according to the cap I just looked at. Jameson Crowder's in last year's contract, making 11 million. And the things I read said, like, hey, we have wide receivers. We have Keelan Cole and Corey Davis, and we just drafted a wide receiver that wasn't a first round pick. I just, with how many injuries happen, and you look at, I mean, Corey Davis is an example. He's never been healthy a lot. He gets hurt here and there. I just don't understand how you can say Keelan Cole and Corey Davis are the answer to getting rid of Jameson Crowder. So I just, the whole thing to make sense to me, it was just very Jets. It was a very Jets thing to do. Hey, I think they averaged 17 points per game with Jameson Crowder on the field, and they only average 9 points per game, not on the field, but when he plays, he only averages 9 points per game when he plays. Like, do you really want to tank again? And like, is that your intention? Like, I know you added Carl Lawson and you added a couple other people, but you need these players. Like, what message are you sending by getting rid of your most effective wide receiver you had last couple of years? One of the best slot receivers in football. So I don't understand. I want to believe the Jets will turn the corner and start not, you know, they'll be like the Browns. The Browns are finally like relevant, it seems like. I want to believe that's going to happen one day. I just don't know when I hear things like that. That's just me personally, though. So
well,
let's move on.
The Jets are going to Jets, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of how it is. And it's the scratch it here because the Jets, I mean, you're in a big market. It's not like even with the financial part, you're just hurting. Like, you're not like, you know, some of the smaller football teams. Like, the Raiders are one of the, I think the ownership of the Raiders is like the lowest, like one of the poorest owners, which you think about it, he's still a multimillionaire, but you're not hurting for money. So, I mean, just like I said, it's a Jets move. So, it's the only thing you can really say at the moment.
So weird looking at you. Anyways, I'll move on. A couple more things. Zach Ertz rumors. That's one I'm very interested in. You know, I talked before, like, I would love to see him go to Jacksonville just to have a – I think it's a match made in heaven. They need a tight end. Jacksonville, you know, okay, Jesus Christ. The Tebow thing is just not – it needs to stop and go away. But, like, he's only 30. He has a couple of good probably prime years left. Like, Trevor Lawrence needs a weapon. I would love to see him Jacksonville. It's just probably not going to happen. The teams I'm hearing are the Bills, the Titans, and Seahawks. Is that what you're hearing, Alex, for Zach Ertz possibly right now?
I'm hearing that. I've also heard the Colts, and I've also heard the Panthers. I don't know how serious those are, but those are other two teams I've heard.
Yeah, so, man, I know the Colts are linked because they're, quote-unquote, that friendship. It seems like lots of tight ends go to the Colts. The Bills, I think, is like – that's got to be a perfect match, right? It's got to be Zach Ertz. I mean, I know Jacksonville makes sense to me, but the Bills, I think, just cleared enough cap space to technically take on Zach Ertz's contract, which a lot of people speculated Ertz to the Bills. But if you think about the fact that, you know, Beasley, he's a great, he's a great second option, third option, but Diggs gets all the attention and he's getting all the points. But Zach Ertz, man, that opens that offense up. Like, Zach Ertz has got to be, in Buffalo's got to be like the best option of all those, right?
Yeah. If he wants to contend for a Super Bowl, yeah, the Bills are probably going to be the best option on that. I've also heard that they were trying to trade for him possibly during the draft. So I know the want from the Bills is there. So I know it's serious. I just don't know, whether or not the Eagles are going to pull the trigger on that.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the last thing, the Stephon Gilmore contract. So this one kind of is an odd situation. Once again, if we're going to call a team and blame them for it, you know, it's a very Patriots thing, I guess you could say. So last year, Gilmore, they moved, I think, about $5 million from his contract he's supposed to make this year, 2021, towards his contract in 2020 to kind of make him more paid value-wise, the amount he should be making. So I think it was a very generous move by the Patriots to move that money from the future up to make him, you know, a higher paid player. Because his contract was a 5-year, $85 million contract that he got when he was in Buffalo, not even in New England. So he's in the last year's contract. He's supposed to make about $7 million this year because of that. So this doesn't mean that the Patriots value him at $7 million. They move money around. You know, to me, it's a generous thing they did. And here we are. So in my opinion, Gilmore says I'm not worth $7 million. I want a new contract. But, you know, he's, what, 31 years old, coming off an injury. My speculation, Alex, is the Patriots are always one step ahead of not really the problem with the players, but they're always proactive in getting their best years they can and then cutting ties and not being stuck with kind of bad money on a contract. So at 31, I have a hard time believing he's going to get a new contract for New England. I have seen how they've used Darius Slay's contract as kind of a target point for money, which I think is about $13, $14 million a year. So have you seen anything on the Gilmore side?
So this is the thing about the Gilmore side. And this is really the Patriot way. You talk about getting rid of a player a year before they probably should be. Obviously, he's not getting a deal this year from the Patriots. They're not going to give him a long-term deal. But the Patriots are the kings right now in the last 15 years of being playing the comp game, the compensatory pick. So they let a player go. They're fine with it. Let them go walk a free agency, get a third, fourth, fifth round pick for them. Use that to build their team. They made most of the heart of their team based off of drafting these type of mid-round players because, Belichick's not a big top in the end draft player anyway. He usually trades back anyway, gets in the second, third, fourth round, drafts those style of players, sits them on the bench, let them develop. In the third, fourth year, you play them, you get them good, and then there we go. I believe looking at just the research, I think ever since 2008, I think the New England Patriots have had at least one compensatory pick in every single draft. Like, for instance, last year they had actually this year, three or four in the five. One was for Tom Brady, one was for Van Noy, and then another one's for Jamie Collins. Like, so if you think about it this way, if they're going to trade him, they're going to want to trade Gilford for something better than the third round pick. And his contract is really cheap. It's really cheap. I mean, it's affordable. Anybody can trade for him. They're not going to break the bank for him. So, the problem is he's going to want a contract. So if they're going to trade, if anyone's going to trade for him, they got to do better for a third round pick. If not, I can see the Patriots kind of keeping him and letting him walk in free agency, and then getting themselves a third round pick. But if somebody's crazy enough to go, hey, we'll give you two thirds or we'll give you a second, then I can see the Patriots move. Or maybe the Patriots decide to trade him if he's becoming too much of an issue. Then it's like, okay, you're a headache here. Let's just get rid of you so we can get you out the building. So, but that's just kind of how the Patriots run their business. So.
Yeah, and I think the report was last year at the trade deadline they were trying to flip him for a first round pick, but I think the injuries kind of messed that up. So I guess that those are kind of the big things going on in the news right now. I guess we'll keep a couple of these close by. Ertz thing should happen at some point, but it seems like the Eagles either are even saying that they want to do what's right for them. They're under the cap right now, which is I think is kind of surprising. So they wanted to be crazy. They could keep him, which it seems like they kind of burnt that bridge with him. But with
You know
Gilmore,
what I've heard kind of coming from the scuttlebutt on the Ertz thing? I've heard that teams have been interested, but they're not giving up a lot for the simple fact that Ertz, he's on the wrong side of 30. He's kind of showing a part that he's kind of slowing down. And as a Cowboy fan, you talk about Jason Witten slowing down type thing. So a lot of people say, hey, you're slowing down and you've been injury prone. No one's giving like a fourth or a fifth round pick for him. They might do some type of sixth or seventh round. So if you look at the Eagles side, if you have a young quarterback, do you really want to get rid of some weapon that's going to help him out just to get a sixth or seventh round pick that you could probably get from anywhere? So the Eagles are going to have to make a decision on that. That's going to be a tough one.
Yep. All right. Let's change gears and let's start breaking down these AFC draft classes in the past year, 2 years now, Alex. All right. Let's get into evaluating these draft picks from the past two draft classes, Alex. So, I enjoyed doing this last time. I think it's really interesting kind of seeing how teams value their top end picks, the decisions they make, what they go after. And kind of how it pans out, because we can already see the picks from the year before, how they kind of panned out. Some obviously they're not final products yet, but you have a good idea kind of what they're going to be. So we're going to go through the AFC side. We'll start with the AFC East. We'll break down each team's last two top picks or top first rounds and see how they did and kind of talk these things out with their demands and needs. So Alex, we're going to start with the Buffalo Bills first. Didn't have a draft pick the year prior because that pick went to the Stephon Diggs trade. So I think that in itself is a slam dunk home run, whatever the hell you want to call that. It worked out phenomenally for the Bills. So giving up a mid to late first round pick for Stephon Diggs and what he did for Josh Allen's progression and development, I think you can't weigh how important that is with what they did. And this year, Gregory Rousseau, I think the edge rusher out of Miami. They had a need for pressuring the quarterback. They picked very late in the draft, so I think Buffalo did a good job. Obviously getting Diggs and then going after edge rushers. Alex, what do you think about Buffalo? What's your breakdown on that?
Oh, I've said before when we did the drafts, I wasn't a big fan on the Gregory Soule. I actually liked the guy that got in the second round better than I like that. But Diggs was such a game changer for the franchise. Sometimes teams get certain players, and that player's more than a player. And to me, Diggs it's just a perfect fit. Diggs was already a good player, but no offense to any other particular quarterback from Minnesota, but he just didn't gel right there. And he went from being a good wide receiver to being an elite wide receiver when he linked up with Josh Allen. That was such a game changer for their franchise. Their franchise is a threat. He's a threat while he's on that team. Josh Allen was a good quarterback. He kind of turned into a great quarterback because so I think the that making that move, and maybe not a draft pick per se, but I think that move has worked out and I think it's going to work out. So I would give them a thumbs up just based off of the Diggs trade by itself.
Yeah, and we talk about how well it helped Josh Allen's development. Man, we talk about how important this one player is to the quarterback. He only had 4 games of below 9 targets, so obviously Josh Allen looked his way a lot. And if you look at his targets compared to his catches, these numbers are kind of crazy. Like usually you'll see someone get targeted 16 times and catch the ball, 8 times sometimes. But week one, 9 targets, 8 catches. Later on, six. I think the worst one was 16 targets, 10 catches. But then he's got some games where 10 targets, 10 catches, 10 targets, 10 catches, 13 targets, 11 catches, 11 targets, 9 catches. So, he is phenomenal and for Josh Allen and that Buffalo Bills offense. And they just took a whole nother step with him when he joined that team. So I think with the Bills now addressing their defense, and even what Alex said, that second round pick may be better than the first round pick. Hey, they got 2 edge rushers. Hopefully one of them pans out. Maybe both are above average. So I think the Bills did a really good job of helping their team out. Let's move on to Miami. Miami last year, they used the number 5 pick on Tua. He had a grade of 65.4 according to PFF. So, we saw how they treated him. They babied him, you could say that. They were a fringe playoff team. They probably could have made the playoffs, maybe if they played Fitzpatrick the whole year. Not to say that that was the wrong move, but at the same time, they did give Tua some valuable game experience. And this year, he's got the full. Improved, quote unquote, improved playbook. He's should be getting better. But the other side of it, they had another first round pick last year, which ended up being Jackson, who got a 52.4, and I think he was one of the worst graded rookie tackles in all of last year. He gave up 38 quarterback pressures, so not really good. Miami has a huge need with offensive line, and then this coming up year, once again they had a couple huge needs offensive line this year again, but also improving the playmaking for Tua. So I think obviously Jalen Waddle was a huge get for them. Now at 6, could you say it's a reach? Maybe, not sure, but if it improves Tua, and if it improves Tua, it improves the offensive line, it could all work out together. Not to mention they did make a couple crazy trades with the Niners and Eagles, so they actually did acquire an additional first round pick by doing all this stuff. So maybe as a whole, you could say Miami took a step forward because they have a potential franchise quarterback. They have a potential franchise wide receiver now. But that offensive line, Jackson, hopefully will develop better going into year two. I think this will be the big thing to see kind of how he goes. But Alex, what do you think about Miami? It's a lot of moving parts there.
So stay with me. In theory, if you had told me what they did, it made sense. You told me the young team was building a nucleus. They drafted a quarterback, they drafted a left tackle, and they drafted a wide receiver. In theory, I would probably have said, you know what? Or even a defensive end, you can add Jalen Phillips in there too. You say those are four cornerstone pieces of a draft. If you're going to draft high in a draft, those four cornerstone pieces are definitely what you want. You want a quarterback, you want something to protect the quarterback, you want somebody to throw the ball to from the quarterback, and you want somebody to get at the quarterback. Other than that, and I say cornerback position, those are like the top five positions to me in football. And four of the five, they drafted them in the first two round, or in the first round of the last 2 years. The problem is the selections. We all thought Tua was a slam dunk. I hope I'm wrong. And time will prove me right or wrong. Quarterbacks take longer sometimes to develop. So and you would we hope that I hope Tua works out, but right now it's not looking like that. He's looking bad in practice. The veterans on the team last year talked about how about much they didn't trust him. Austin Jackson, you know, that I already, you know, last year I talked about this, obviously not on the podcast, but Austin Jackson was not a good pick. He probably should have been taken a little bit later. There are probably better players they could have took on the board. Hopefully he can turn around, it, but right now it wasn't a good pick. The Waddle pick, talked about it being kind of high. I'm never really big, you know, not going to fight anybody who wants to get a weapon for the quarterback, but they already had wide receivers. They needed a tackle, and they passed on it, actually multiple times because they traded down and traded back up with the Niners. So the only thing good I can say that's solid right now, they got the extra picks from this past year. And then also, you in theory drafted the right positions. We just got questioned, did you draft the right players? Because if we find out that the Chargers got, you know, got the better quarterback and they passed on them, and same thing with Jalen Waddle. If they pass on Jalen Waddle and Smith is better, they're going to be kicking themselves in 5 years, or in 5 years, that whole front regime is going to be fired. So it's a lot to see, but I give them credit for trying their best. I mean, they did the right thing, but it seems like the picks just so far in last year doesn't look like they're panning out.
Yeah, and I get the Jalen Waddle. That's a sexy pick if you want to boost your quarterback, because your team goes as far as your quarterback. But you know, at the end of the day, I'm always going to be pro offensive line. To me, you win in the trenches in this league. And Austin Jackson, like Alex is just talking about, you know, he was the 18th pick. He was a part of the Tunsil trade. The additional picks that they got, I can't remember which one they kept, but I think the number five, I think the Tua pick was actually the part of the Tunsil trade technically. But I could be mixing it up. But either way, Austin Jackson, how bad he was, you know, it's one thing to be a rookie, but he was the 75th out of 79 tackles. That's how badly he was graded, the 75th out of 79 tackles. So there, you know, he can only get better. So I think we really got to see how Austin Jackson progresses. If he does, sometimes some players take crazy leaps in year two, and you just got to hope for the Dolphins that a lot of these young, you know, players develop the way they hope they do. So like Alex said, for their sake, I hope it does work out for them, because we're already seeing, like Alex said, also the Herbert thing compared to the Tua thing. Herbert thrown right into the fire looks like a freaking future Hall of Famer, essentially. And then you got Tua, people just judging him kind of maybe poorly and harshly already. But, you know, they have a bunch of draft picks, so hopefully they make the best of it and it works out. So New England is up next. Last year, New England had a first-round pick, but I think they did the Alex Ford Madden tactic. They traded out of the first, they got a second and a third, and they just kept trading back and back and back. They ended up with 2 second-round picks and 3 third-round picks. And for those of you that have not played Madden with Alex, this is exactly what he does some years in Madden. He will find talent later on. He's the Bill Belichick of Madden sometimes. And this is exactly what they did last year. So their top pick was actually a safety Duger. He had a 65 grade. So their person that ended up being their quote unquote first round pick, which was a second round pick, had a really good grade for a rookie. And they, like I said, they had 5 picks in the top 3 rounds. So I think that went well. And then this year, and this is the big mystery of this year, Mac Jones, Mac and Cheese, as they call him now, apparently. How's he going to pan out? You know, I've been very against Mac Jones this whole time. And this quote unquote smoke screen that has been up there where Chris Sims has been fooled so badly, but he loves Mac Jones. And everyone says Mac Jones is a great quarterback. I'm going to keep saying by the fact until I'm proven wrong that Mac Jones was a great college quarterback. A lot of Alabama quarterbacks. I know Alabama, it's going to piss off Alabama fans. You guys have such superior talent at the college level. It is easy to throw people open at the college level because they're already 5 steps open at the college level. He is not anticipating people open because he doesn't have to. You have people that run 4.3 as your wide receiver. Look how many wide receivers they've produced in the past couple of years, starting from Julio Jones all the way down. Like, we even talk about Amari Cooper. We talk about Waddle. We're talking about all these Alabama wide receivers that are phenomenal wide receivers. And there's a reason why no Alabama quarterbacks have really succeeded. Now, Tua will hopefully prove people wrong, but that's what scares me about Tua. And that's what scares me about Mac Jones, is how good these wide receivers are. So, you know, I could see why Belichick did it, but it's one of those things where, man, I feel like people are pigeonholing him and just telling him that, hey, he needs Tom Brady. And You know, I feel like they were better off without Mac Jones. I'm anti Mac Jones. I don't really like it. I think Cam Newton was not great, but he was good before the COVID stuff happened. And if they would have had a second year with him, they could have opened the offense up more because he protected him a lot in the offense. So that's my opinion. I think last year Alex, they did a great job, and I think this year, man, it's so hard to predict the Mac Jones thing. It can go two completely different ways. So what's your take on New England?
Their last two drafts were solely on Mac Jones. Let's just keep it as honest as we can. They didn't have a first round pick to trade it out. They're going to, you know, we talked earlier about how they like to trade in the middle rounds between the second and the fifth round and build their roster. And really, to tell you the truth, the last couple of years, Belichick hasn't been that great at drafting. The year before, the Nikhil Harry draft pick, that was a terrible draft pick. But right now, it's hinging on Mac Jones. Did you make it right? Did you choose the right quarterback? Because if you didn't choose the right quarterback, it doesn't matter what you do in the middle rounds. You can play really good defense and run the football, do everything. But if you suck at quarterback, your team sucks. I mean, look at all the bad teams in the NFL. Not many of them. Maybe the Falcons, I put them in there. But all of them suck because they don't have a quarterback. So it's hinging on Mac Jones. I'm not that big of a believer. And really, when you think about it, you're not supposed to scout the helmet. But think about Alabama history. They've only really had one great Alabama cornerback. And that's Joey Willie Namath. You know, that's the only great quarterback they've ever had coming out. And I think maybe was Barkstar Alabama?
That's too far back. We're not that old, Alex.
But, you know, they just don't have a big track record of great quarterbacks in the last 30 or 40 years, man. So,
yes, he did go to Alabama.
Yeah, so kudos to me. But, I mean – other than that, I mean, you don't have any track record of great quarterbacks in the last contemporary football, you know. So, you're going against the grain right now. You hope they work out. You hope any of the players work out. I don't personally root for anybody. I root against teams, but I don't root against many players. But you kind of hope it works out. But Tua's struggling right now. And two, I think, was better than Mac Jones to me personally in college. But, I mean, we'll see.
I don't understand how you know, like, yes, Barstar is a great quarterback, but he played in Alabama from 1952 to 1956, which is when the Korean War happened, which predates all of us. So I don't know how you know that, but good on you. Props on that one. Let's move on.
I played Stomp the Swap a couple of times before, so I kind of get that in my memory. Right.
That makes more sense now. Let's move on to the Jets now. So we already questioned their madness of method of how they do everything. So let's talk about what they did. So last year, Becton, the tackle that they had, I think was kind of one of those where people weren't really sure how he was going to pan out. But he, I think, exceeded expectations. He had times where he gave up multiple sacks, and he had times where he had issues. But to me, that's really I don't know if that falls on him as much as it falls on how bad the whole offensive line was, how bad the weapons were for the quarterback. You know, Becton had a grade of 4.4, which was the 31st best tackle in football. So he's better than half of the tackles already in a bad situation. So I think the Jets nailed that one. I think they have a great tackle to go forward with. If you look what they did this year, they got Vera Tucker, who I think they're still trying to figure out if he's going to be a guard or right tackle. Right now, he's listed as the left guard. So it's kind of, you know, it's interesting. You have Vera Tucker, left guard. You have Becton, left tackle. So you have that left side locked up if that's really going to happen. So the Jets traded up to 14 to get Vera Tucker. They were at 20-something. They traded with the Vikings. But obviously the other pick was the one that matters most over all this stuff is Zach Wilson. So I can't contradict myself because I just talked about how much the offensive line is important. Yes, the Jets could have done other things with these draft picks. I think by getting two potentially great offensive linemen with a quarterback who, yes, there's a lot of mystery to him. But, hey, so is Josh Allen. And Josh Allen had a big arm, and look how he turned out. Now, granted, he's got more mobility than Zach Wilson, but – We'll see how this pans out because you have Crowder, who's staying there as one of the top slot receivers. You have Corey Davis, who's staying there as a number 10 rated wide receiver last year. I don't know if people know that. Corey Davis was a 10th rated PFF wide receiver last year at 85.3. And they have a good offensive line, and they're building a defense with a defensive-minded coach with Robert Saleh. You know, I think the Jets are going in the right direction. I really want to believe that they're laying the pieces in place, Alex, that makes sense. So what do you think about those moves?
I like the pick. He was a guy who was going to be a lot of upside. He had the ability to be a top tackle. He just needed some time, and he still needs some work. I wouldn't be surprised in a couple of years he's one of the top tackles in football. He's got the tools. I mean, he's got the athleticism. They go, a lot of scouts call it the dancing bear syndrome, where he's like a big guy who dances like a little bear. It's funny to think about the thinking, but that's kind of how you kind of look at a tackle, just based off how they slide. So he's got the ability. He keeps working it. He'll be a top 5-10 tackle in a couple of years, no doubt. I'm going to be pretty honest. I was really scared on the second pick that the Jets made this past year. I thought they were going to go running back. I was like, God, please don't go running back, Jets. Don't pull a Jet move. Do not go running back, because that's the last thing they need. They need a bunch of picks. So they went with Vera Tucker, so I kind of braved a little bit there. I think that's the smart move. I mean, solidify the blind side of your quarterback. Whoever's going to be quarterback, whether it's going to be Darnold or it's going to be Wilson, he needs to protect the left side. Make the guy feel comfortable. The quarterback's going to play great. He's got to feel comfortable in the pocket. So just like you said, it starts with the trenches. That's the more important. I think Vera Tucker is going to be a very good player. I think he'll be better at guard than he is at tackle, even though he can play tackle. And the Zach Wilson thing, it's just the same thing with Darnold. Are you going to support your young quarterback with pieces? Are you going to put him in a situation to actually succeed? And you can say to a certain point they didn't do that with Darnold. I only hope they do it with Zach Wilson, because Zach Wilson, he's got game. If you just put him in the right situation, and now he's already going into the Shanahan style offense. So if you just pay attention to the coaching, you're going to put a good quarterback in a great situation. So I think the Jets are heading in the right direction, but watch this again. It's about the front office. Are they going to help support their quarterback?
Yeah, man. And the more I look at all what the Jets did, I feel like in not this year, but next year is the year where the Jets, I think, are going to surprise a lot of people. Because when you look at, if you look at their roster right now, their defensive line was good last year. I don't think people understand their defensive line was actually good last year. They get CJ Mosley back. Carl Lawson was the 14th ranked edge rusher in all of football. Marcus May was the 5th ranked safety in all of football. And going into next year, they're going to have one more good draft class. Let's be honest. They're not going to be good this year. They have things that they need to fix. They need to figure out Zach Wilson. But hear me out, Alex. Their two corners are, let's just be honest, their corners are trash. This next year is one of the deepest scouted and rated corner classes in a long time for college football. Maybe the Jets are actually lining things up the right way, because there are two weaknesses right now that I see, or a couple weaknesses. Our cornerback is a huge weakness. Running back, Tevin Coleman's a starting running back as of right now. They had Frank Gore last year, so I think enough said on that. Chris Herndon's never worked at tight end. So running backs, you can draft second, third running backs. I mean, Alex, keep talking about that. Don't waste a first-round pick on a running back. You know, second, third, fourth-round pick, you can find a running back. And if they're using the Kyle Shanahan offense, which their offensive coordinator came from under Kyle Shanahan, they don't need a high-profile running back. They just need a quick dude that can hit the hole in a zone scheme. So you draft a couple corners next year or sign one, because they're going to have 30. Right now they got 30 million cap space. Man, that's not much that they have to do. I think the Jets could really surprise a lot of people, not this year, in the next year, if they stay the course and they don't do anything stupid, which it's the Jets. So maybe I just jinxed them. But
yeah, but they got somebody else to do something more stupid and trade. They got another first-round pick from the Seahawks next year. So they're in good shape.
Touche. All right, let's move on. AFC North, Baltimore. I think last year they had Patrick Queen. I think when you see things about Patrick Queen here and there, he looked like a good linebacker. However, the bad side about him, his grade was a 29.8. Not a good grade at all. He had, I believe, 20, he had the most missed tackles, I think, in football. He had 22 missed tackles, and he gave up a passer rating of 117.5. The big issue, and I think me and Alex talked about this before, a big issue with a lot of linebackers coming out is the responsibilities they have. They are not good in coverage. It's hard to find a good coverage linebacker. A lot of linebackers, you know, they have some of that instinct to tackle and run down, you know, and make those plays. But when they get into those play actions, when they have to cover a tight end, sometimes a wide receiver, these young linebackers are struggling, and that's what happened. Patrick Queen was the 82nd out of 83 linebackers in terms of grade. So you got to hope that he develops, which he should be able to. If you look at all the grades on the Baltimore's defense, he was the only one that wasn't green. So you have to believe that he's going to improve. I don't think he's going to be bad. Even the linebacker on Tampa Bay that came out of LSU, Devin White, you know, he's the same way. It took him a little bit. He had phenomenal speed, but it took him a little bit for him to kind of put it all together. And he still had moments where he missed tackles and missed coverages and stuff like that. But I think Patrick Queen is going to be an improvement this next year. Their other pick that they had this year, they had two picks this year because of that trade with the Chiefs, Rashawn Bateman, the wide receiver, you know, could work out. Right now they have Sammy Watkins and Marquise Brown as their top wide receivers. So at least they don't have to put him right away to start. He can be kind of that third. And then the edge rusher that they got out of, I believe, Penn State, which, you know, I think if there's any team, Alex, that produces edge rushers that you just don't question, it's probably Baltimore. So I just feel like it's going to work itself out. What do you think about Baltimore with it?
I like the Oway pick. If he was in any other system, I'd kind of scratch my head because he's a little raw. I mean, he's got all the tools and different things, the physicality that you want. The only thing about it is, and this is going to shock people, he doesn't have a sack. He didn't have a sack all last year, which is a little bit head-scratching for a first-round pick. You look and say, hey, why did they draft a guy? He didn't get a sack last year because he is a physical freak. He really is one of those guys that really doesn't know what he's doing yet. He's going to get put in this Baltimore system. Baltimore blitzes brings a lot of different pressure packages. So they're going to get a way to get him to get to the quarterback. So it won't be your normal pass rush, you know, when a guy just drops down and he's just going after the quarterback. They're going to do some stunts. They're going to do some blitz packages, leave their corners on the islands. And they're going to find ways to get him to the quarterback. Bateman, I like the pick. I know when we did our mock draft, we have taken two wide receivers because they needed two wide receivers. They need weapons, especially if you're trying to get your pass game started. You needed weapons, and Bateman's kind of helping out with that. Linebacker situation kind of is what it is. Back to what you said, it's very hard, especially to be a rookie. It's harder now to be a linebacker than it was before. No offense to the old guys like Buckus and Singletary and Ray Lewis, but these guys aren't having to flex out and have to run with running backs like Darren Sproles to try to cover them. And then the next play, you got to cover a tight end like Travis Kelce. The next play, you get put in on a slot wide receiver. You got to, you know, run with a slot wide receiver. It's just so much that the linebacker has to do in the game these days. You know, it's kind of – some people think it's kind of one of those positions where it doesn't matter if you draft it anywhere. But if you don't have a really good linebacker who could do that things, and Quinn can do that, he just needs some time. That's the main thing with him. He needs time. He needs to understand kind of his fit, kind of understand how he should run different angles. And then also Baltimore's got to understand they can't put him on islands like that as much anymore.
Yeah, I like the thing you said about OA, just kind of the physical freak he is, man. When you think about physical freaks, you think about Jason Pierre-Paul, you know, coming out, we didn't have everything you wanted about him playing small school. OA obviously was Penn State, but he didn't, like Alex said, didn't have a sack last year. You think of Jason Pierre-Paul, you think DeMarcus Ware, those kind of guys that are just physical freaks that came out and just did phenomenal things in the NFL. Now, I think we talked about this before, but I think if just to kind of recapture it for people to understand how much of a physical freak Owe is, he's 6'5", 257. Okay. His teammate, who we just mentioned, Bateman, ran a 4.39 on his pro day. Well, who else ran a 4.39? Owe. Owe also ran a 4.39 at his Penn State pro day. So you have this linebacker, physical freak, running the same as your wide receiver that you just drafted. That's insane. So we'll see how he turns out. But, you know, with the Baltimore's defense, it's kind of hard for me to question what the Baltimore does on defense. If you look at the grades across the board, man, they're nasty. They have all greens across the board. They're all people in the top, top 75 percentile of their position outside of Patrick Queen. So I think those new guys, well, the OA and the Queen will be just fine in Baltimore's defense. Let's moving on. Cincinnati, Alex, I don't think I need to say much. Joe Burrows, I think what we saw out of him, he was phenomenal. He was as advertised as a first round pick or as a number one pick overall. He had a grade of 75.1, which is pretty damn good for a rookie quarterback. And then this year they take Jamar Chase, who kind of slot in as their new number one wide receiver. So yes, me and Alex talked about how, yeah, they needed an offensive line. Maybe the quarterback wide receiver somehow fixes that. I don't really agree with it, but at the same time, if you're going to take wide receiver, I think Jamar Chase is probably the one wide receiver where it's the exception. I think I would take him over any other wide receiver in the draft class. So what do you think about the Bengals?
They were right taking the top quarterback. The question is going to be on that second of the first round pick this past year. You pass on an offensive lineman. I think Chase is going to be an absolute beast. I think he's kind of this mixture of like a fast Anquan Boldin / Dez Bryant type of physical freak. And that's scary. I think he's that good. The problem is the question is going to be, you passed on, yeah, you got this great wide receiver who might be a top five, top 10 wide receiver in 2 or 3 years. But heck, what's it going to mean if your quarterback's on his back? So they're going to, this one of those picks that we're going to be looking back at it. And if Joe Burrow gets hurt again, and God, I'm not praying for him to get hurt, but if he gets hurt again, you're going to see people rolling their eyes. Well, why didn't you get the left tackle? You had two you could have picked from. So it's going to be hinging on his health, really, to show you both picks. Because if he's healthy, Joe Burrow is going to be a really good quarterback. If he's not healthy, it's because the first round pick this past year didn't help him out. So that's kind of how it goes.
Yep. All right, let's move on to Cleveland. Last year, they had number 10 pick overall with, I think, Jordan Willis, the offensive tackle, who was the left tackle for the Browns. He had a grade of 61.1. He has moments of being good. He wasn't terrible. He was 57 out of 79 tackles. The interior line, but Joe Bitonio was fifth overall. J.C. Tretter was second overall of all centers. The other guard, Teller, was the first guard. The other tackle, Jake Conklin, was the 10th. So Willis was kind of the weak spot in that whole offensive line, and I think he's just going to get better. I could see him improving. I don't think I'm as worried about Willis. The pick this year, Greg Newsome, the second, I believe. If you look at them, their pass rush was Myles Garrett. They added Jevonte Clowney, but he's not really a pass rusher, if you will. The Browns' defense is. Secondary is pretty good. Newsom's the kind of the question mark. So as long as he can hold up, as long as the Browns get some pressure on the quarterback, I think he could be okay. So I'm more confident that Wills would be better. I'm not sure about Newsom. What about you, Alex?
Wills was a solid pick, and I really like the Newsom pick. Newsom ran a lot of cover three in Northwestern, and I think the Browns are kind of that cover three, similar to what Seattle and what the 49ers originally ran a couple of years ago. So he's the type of corner that can slide in and know exactly what's going on. I don't know if people have noticed, but the Cleveland Browns are getting scary. They're getting scary, ladies and gentlemen. Good luck passing on them. They got a deep secondary. That secondary is going to be scary. You got one of the top five pass rushers, Myles Garrett, coming off the edge with us as well. They rebuilt their offensive line. Their offensive line is tough. They got two backs in the backfield. They're 1,500 yard backs. So the Browns have silently been having great drafts really for the last 3 years when you look at it. So I think they've done a solid job.
Yeah, and the other thing I don't think people understand is that even at their linebacker core, they improved by getting Wusu Koumoura, your boy out of Notre Dame, as a second round pick. That could be the steal of all the steals right now. It's crazy seeing the Browns making these moves. It's kind of weird when I think it's going to come down to Alex of Was OBJ really holding the offense back? That's going to be the interesting question next year, because he'll be coming back healthy. You know, were they better without him? So we'll see going forward. Let's move on to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So for the Steelers, they traded out last year. You got Micah Fitzpatrick. He was a grade of 79.5. It's safe to say that they maybe won that trade. I think he's been phenomenal for them. And then this year, Pittsburgh, well, actually, so going back with that, they didn't have first round pick. However, their first pick that they did have was Claypool, who was a stud wide receiver. He had a grade of 75.6, which is really good, especially for a rookie wide receiver. He actually graded higher than their two starting wide receivers, Johnson and Smith-Schuster. So that's how good he was. And then this year is the question mark. You know, me and Alex talked about it before, but offensive line, they were considered the worst run-blocking offensive line of football. They didn't improve it. They actually lost people. And then they added a running back. So, you know, if Alabama products were going to create something the best, probably big stud running backs. So maybe Harris can help that. But, you know, I think they missed the mark on the draft this year. But the Claypool and Fitzpatrick combination last year, Jesus, I think those are two home runs they made last year. What do you think?
I think when you think about the Fitzpatrick pick actually turning into Austin Jackson, I'd say they did a good job on that part. The Micah Fitzpatrick deal was a situation where you get a good player coming from another organization. I hate to say it's a steal, but that's what a good safety goes for. So I think it was a solid deal. Now, we talked about the running back in the first round. To me, you take a running back in the first round, but he needs to be like some type of world setting. I mean, you got to be looking at Barry Sanders or Adrian Peterson. If you think you're just looking at a solid back, taking him in the first round, I guess you could say maybe with the fifth round pick, you'll get a little bit more run out of him. But I thought they should have went offensive line. Their offensive line got really old. They should have went double down on offensive line. They did not. We're going to see if it works out. Najee Harris, I hope he does well. He's got the tools. He's not a home run back, but he does everything they need. They need, you know, some tough running. I need a guy that's going to catch the ball out the backfield, can block. So he can do all that type of stuff. The problem is how are you going to be able to do it when you don't have the big style Alabama holes that he's going to be able to run through? You know, we talked about the offensive side of the ball with Alabama last couple of years for quarterback. You can say the same thing for running backs. Running backs can get some holes. You can, I hate to say a Maddenism, but holes that you can drive a truck through. He's not going to get that in Pittsburgh. So if he's able to survive that or somehow, some way they're able to improve their offensive line, then it's a good pick. If not, it's going to be a waste.
Yep. So something that I want to talk about really quickly is we had the trade that you were just talking about, the Fitzpatrick trade. And Alex said, that's the right value. That's the value that goes for a good safety, one first round pick. So really quickly, just because I love piling this stuff on, Fitzpatrick was the 11th best safety in all of football, according to the grades. Jamal Adams was the 53rd best safety last year. The thing that he was the best at, which I don't even know why this is a tracked category, he was the best pass rushing safety in football. In coverage, he was the 78th best safety out of 93 safeties in coverage as a safety, which is what you should be doing. The 78th best out of 93 for two first round picks. Well, hey, maybe he's better at run defense because he's in the box. He is the 57th out of 87 that qualified for that run defense grade. I don't understand the hype behind Jamal Adams. I'm going to keep bringing this up. It makes no sense. Please sign him to the max contract. It's not even a thing in the NFL. Sign him for the rest of his career. Pay him $30 million a year. Keep him in Seattle. I will love to watch this for the rest of my time as a Niners fan. He makes no sense.
I think it's also based on him being a first-round pick. It seems like first-round picks, people know more about that, so they think guys are really good players. But just because your first round pick doesn't make you a top player.
Yeah, it's I just personally don't get it. So we're gonna move on. I think this next one's the quickest one, Alex. Houston. I just feel bad for them. First round pick from 2020-21 were in the Tunsil trade. Tunsil's grade was 75.4, the 27th best offensive tackle. So he was a little bit above average. So they're doing the Rams method without the quality of play. So, those two things don't really combine to be successful. So I don't think we can really grade Houston, Alex. I think it's just unfortunate what's going on there, how badly, you know, their Bill O'Brien did as the all-powerful coach slash GM. And that kind of shows that maybe a lot of coaches probably shouldn't have that power. So what, is there anything you want to add on for the Houston situation on that?
Well, if we're going to grade them, we got to grade them. So let's just say it. 1, 2, 3, they sucked. Okay. They sucked at it. They didn't understand the value of the draft, the importance of the draft. The draft's a lifeblood of your team. Everybody doesn't have the money to go out and sign starting players in free agency. It's just the cap's not made that way. You need the draft to be able to replenish your roster. And they had a decent roster 2 or 3 years ago that they could compete with. They went to the playoffs with it. But now that they've lost players in free agency, they needed those picks. And Tunsil's a good player, but he wasn't worth the value that was given up. And now we're seeing the repercussions. We're seeing the repercussions with the D-Hop trade. Just not getting proper value back when you're throwing away these picks. You know, the Rams can get away with it because they got talent and they're keeping talent. But when you're looking at other teams like the Houston, if you're just giving away picks and you're not getting proper value, you're not getting better as a team. So, I mean, you can see it in the situation is they were the third, fourth worst team this year. They're going to be a top two, a bottom two, bottom three team again this year just because there's just no way they can get better.
All right, let's move on to the Colts. They had no first-round pick last year, but that first-round pick went to the DeForest Buckner trade. Once again, we're talking about a good value for a pick. That, to me, is another one, a first-round pick for a top-end talent. I'd say outside Aaron Donald, he's probably one of the best defensive tackles in football. He's the fifth best defensive tackle in football, a grade of almost a 90, which is really, really good. And then this year they had, I think, Quiddy Pay, who they got as the edge rusher that's going to be kind of probably next to Buckner. So out of Michigan, what do you think about the Colts? Because to me, the Buckner is a slam dunk that makes up for both years, essentially. But what do you think as a total for both?
I liked it. I thought that was a smart trade for them. They have all this money. And they didn't necessarily need assets. They needed to be able to use this to be aggressive, get players. So the Buckner thing made sense. They took care of him. But also they need another pass rusher. They drafted Quiddy Pay. Quiddy Pay is known mostly for his pass rushing great moves. But, I mean, day one he comes in, he's going to be a solid run-stopping defensive end who could definitely develop into a good defensive end pass rusher situation. So I thought over across the board, they needed help on the defense line. They were solid in doing that.
All right, let's move on to Jacksonville. Last year, they had the corner out of Florida, C.J. Henderson. He got a grade of 57.9, around, you know, average, league average. Probably, I think it's a little worse than league average, but I don't know how much you can blame him. They got Griffin out of Seattle as the opposite corner now this coming up year, so maybe that helps him. But at the same time, I think it comes down to pass rush, their inability to generate pass rush. Their defensive line didn't really get a grade. Josh Allen was pretty good on his grade. But I think C.J. Henderson still has time to develop. He is year-ended early because of injuries. He was shut down by week 10. So I think it's good potential. However, their second of their first-round picks, Chaseon, I believe is how you say his last name, he struggled very early on. He kind of got better, but at the same time, he still ended as the fifth worst edge rusher in all of football. So there's a lot to be desired from him. As of right now, he's the projected starter. I guess we'll see if Urban Meyer changes anything. But then that's a whole different regime. Now this year, different regime, Urban Meyer regime. They got Trevor Lawrence number one. I think that's obviously a slam dunk pick. Yeah, considered one of the generational talents, kind of on par with Andrew Luck, minus the retiring part, hopefully for them. But then the Travis Etienne, the thing with him, you know, I think of all the running backs, maybe this is the one that is most interesting because they're planning on using him in more than just a running back. They're planning on using him out of the slot in a couple different roles. Kind of, they were using him as the matchup nightmare of the offense, which I think they need because their wide receivers are average to good at best, above average offensive line, a good running offensive line. But I think, you know, that's one of these debates me and Alex can have of maybe that pick could have went better, could have been better used elsewhere because their defense has so many holes on it. So as a whole, like good potential, you have four picks in two first rounds. So I think that's the part that you really like. And I don't think it's realistic, Alex, to expect to hit on all four. You don't see that happening in any draft class. So I think I like what they're doing. What about you?
I like what they were doing. I wasn't a fan of a Clemyon Chaseon situation. He was more like a tweener. I thought he should be good going for a 3-4 outside situation, but they took him. I know a lot of teams actually liked him, but he's one of those thin players that's going to be light in the butt to stop the run. So I was a big fan of his, and it showed in his rookie year. Basically, if he wasn't on the field being a great pass rusher, he wasn't going to help out. The Hennessy kind of thing kind of shot me, him having kind of a little down year. But it's hard to be a cornerback first year in the NFL. It's just hard. The way the rules are and you're going against to these top physical freaks at wide receiver, it's hard to kind of do that. I think Henderson's going to bounce back. They did the no-brainer with Trevor Lawrence. I mean, let's not make this thing as complicated as possible. Lawrence was kind of the number one player on your board. He's kind of a generation talent, what everyone thinks. You take him, no one's going to blame you unless something happens and goes wrong with it. We can talk about the ETN thing type of thing because he's a good pick. Just where it went may have been what I had a problem with because I think he could be a compliment to Robinson. Robinson, the rookie, you know, the undrafted running back last year, I think they got him as a steal, but he could be more of the kind of power in-between guy, and ETN could be kind of the mismatch guy. You could kind of, you know, like you said, put them in the slot. You know, you get two running backs out at the same time, you know, put them in the slot, throw them the ball. So he can do some mismatch things. And plus he knows that kind of system that they're going to be running. So like you said, it's unrealistic for all four to hit. But if they hit on three of the four, I mean, they'd have a good draft.
All right. Next, move on to Tennessee. So Tennessee, they had the offensive tackle Wilson, played three snaps in the NFL, injury issues, COVID, legal problems, and he's off the team already. So, and he's probably out of football, I think, is how that's going to work out for him. So they're the first team to pretty much can say they failed on their first round pick. And then what do? They double down on taking another risk. They take who I consider the best cornerback in the draft at 22, Caleb Farley, with major health issues. Health issues that probably should worry you. I think lower back injuries and stuff like that. So, they're already a playoff team, but they need quarterback help. So it's kind of maybe kind of unfortunate because they're forcing him into a situation where they really do need him to perform kind of early on. So I think the Texans are the worst graded right now, but maybe Titans are close second just because of the huge question mark on this picks that they have left over with Cam Farley, even though, like I said, I think he could be the one of the biggest steals. What do you think?
You cut your first round pick within the first year. That's a huge miss. I don't know kind of the situation. I've kind of heard rumblings of what the situation was, and maybe the kids might be able to get, you know, Wilson may be able to get his life together, get things taken care of off the field, and come back in a couple of years. But that is a huge – that's a huge miss. It was a reach to me. I didn't think he should have went there. I thought he was more of a second, third round player, but they needed a need an offensive line, and they went there. So yeah, that's a big reach right there. Caleb Farley, I really love the player. No, get me wrong, I really love the player. I think he has Jalen Ramsey in him. He just has the athletic ability to kind of cover any type of athletic wide receiver. it could be a hit or miss. It could be a hit. He could be a top five quarterback in 2 years, or it could be a miss. He could be injury prone, and he barely plays half the game. So that's the rolling the dice of the Titans. And, you know, I don't understand why the Titans don't need to take these big risks. They're so close to being like a contender consistently, but I mean, every front office is different. So,
all right, let's move on to the last division. We got the AFC West. Last year, that number 15 that took Jerry Jeudy had a 65.2 grade, which, you know, you probably want him to be a little bit better. That's not terrible, though. I think the big issue with him is he had a 18.9% drop rate. So, is that on him? Is it on the quarterback? Because he probably didn't have a lot of catchable balls thrown his way, but he definitely needs to improve his catch rate. So Jerry Jeudy, though, you know, potential number one, a good potential number one wide receiver in development. And that's one of those teams where, you know, obviously if they have Aaron Rodgers, I'm sure all of that changes. So we'll watch that one. And then the other side is Patrick Surtain. So they have one of the best nickel corners in Callahan. And then they have Darby on the outside, Fuller on the other side. They have good corners, but they double down, triple down, quadruple down, whatever you want to call that. And they go Patrick Surtain, taking potentially the best corner in football, probably the safest bet as the best corner football, because we just talked about Caleb Farley having injury issues. So I think there's question marks around taking Surtain there. You know, I think I like them taking Micah Parsons. I think they had a big need for a linebacker that would have helped them on their defense. You know, so what do you think, Alex?
I always think it's funny you talk about the linebacker thing. Kind of the fans always kind of look on the outside of what the team thinks. I always want to really wish I was inside a team war room and see what they really think their team needs is. Because to me, it screamed linebacker, but it's like, okay, you went cornerback. Okay, that was a little weird. You didn't necessarily need it. You probably need a linebacker, but you kind of don't really know what teams think them. So they might think their linebacker core is great. They might just think, hey, let's go better. We need some more help at cornerback. So that was a weird one, but I can't blame them for if they thought he was the best player on the board. I mean, take him. That is what it is, what it is. I thought Jerry Jeudy, I thought that was a solid pick. I think at that point they could have went him or Lamb. I like Judy's route running better than I like Lamb's route running. So I thought they're solid picks. We really can't see much from Jeudy from the simple fact is the inconsistent quarterback. So as soon as they get the quarterback situations fixed, who knows? In the next couple of weeks, he could be getting the ball from Aaron Rodgers. Who the hell knows? But when they get a better quarterback situation, we'll be able to see a lot more from Jerry Jeudy.
All right. Kansas City, last year, number 32, they took the fantasy godsend Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who fooled all of us, including and especially me, by taking him in pretty much in every draft I had and every league I had just to struggle for my whole year because he didn't do what everyone told me. So Matthew Berry, how dare you lie to me? I'm not going to listen to you ever again. However, he did have a grade of 75.3, which is technically a good grade. I think the problem was just that he, you know, was not a focal point of the offense in terms of he wasn't getting a lot of passes like they talked about him getting. He got hurt in the later half of the year. They ended up playing other running backs. So, you know, he was technically the 17th best running back out of 70. Of course, stats-wise, and when you think running backs, you think fantasy points, so you don't think him to be as good, but he performed very well as a running back, so he's only going to get better. They also probably helped him out because they greatly improved the offensive line. So that's one of those things where maybe you do consider keeping him in a keeper's league. Like I have him in a keeper's league. I'm considering it, probably not still, but that offensive line is so drastically improved, which is tied to this year's pick. They trade their first-round pick for Orlando Brown, who's going to slide over to left tackle because he wants to play left tackle, which is why he left Baltimore. So they improved their offensive line. Joe threw at guard. Blythe, the ninth graded center. They got back their other guard who didn't play last year because of COVID, I believe. So Orlando Brown meshes with that offensive line, which ties into Clyde Edwards-Helaire being their first-round pick last year. To me, what the Chiefs did is terrifying for the rest of the league. We saw maybe the questionable coaching decisions with how they went about their mangled offensive line in the Super Bowl. But if there was ever a way to address that, man, the Chiefs completely did that. I think the Chiefs are scary and somehow better. That's just my opinion, though. What about you, Alex?
I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire was more tied to how the coaching staff wanted to play the running game. You already heard Le'Veon Bell talk about this weekend how he was kind of frustrated how he was used. And even in the Super Bowl, they were running the ball very great, and then and nowhere they just stopped running the football. So this is always about Andy Reid. Andy Reid's more of this thing: is he going to commit to the run? Is he going to stay with the run? If he stays with the run, it's going to be good for him. I thought the Helaire pick. We talked about running backs. We're not going to beat running backs dead like this. He definitely could have been, could have been taken a little bit later. But they were at the end of the first round from winning the Super Bowl the previous year. So it was one of those in-between type of things. You can't really blame them for that. But I think the Orlando Brown thing, let's just be honest, they needed a tackle. There was no tackle that was close to what they were getting with Brown. So I think overall, I think there was the first pick we talked about where it is, but still, I think it's still going to be a good pick. But the Brown pick, trading for him, I think that's going to be a better situation for them. So I still think they did a solid job.
Definitely. All right, let's move on to the team that gives us the most confusing tactics in a draft, probably in the history of anything. The Las Vegas Raiders last year with the number 13 pick took Henry Ruggs above all these other wide receivers that probably should have went ahead of him, probably. But he is the prototypical Raiders Al Davis type of wide receiver of, damn, he's fast as hell. So fast that he was the fourth worst wide receiver in all of football last year because that probably didn't use right. Hurt at the start of the year, training camp, didn't get his reps in, didn't get to sync with David Carr or Derek Carr maybe. So hopefully Ruggs, I don't think he can get worse. And they lost Nelson Aguilar, so they definitely have a need for him there. The big issue was the second pick they had, number 19 overall, was Arnett, the corner. Grade of 51.7, considered the fifth worst cornerback in all of football. So, Alex, you had the fourth worst wide receiver and the fifth worst corner in all of football in your first round last year. This year, you take Alex Leatherwood, who's better suited to be a guard, and they have him listed as a right tackle right now. So, potential second, third round pick taken in the first round. They reached for him. On par with the Texans is pretty much what I'm going to say. It's a huge question marks. All the Raiders fans I talked to are very adamant about how it's going to work out, and I think it's just delusion on their part. So what do you think?
I had a brain fart because I started to think myself, am I the only person that confuses David Carr with Derek Carr? I just felt for the longest, I want to call Derek David and David Derek. So I completely have brain farts like that. So I think to myself of that. I mean, I feel like they look so much the same, but it's the deep thing with it. So here we go, Raiders fans. You guys always get on me for ragging on you, what you guys do. But, I mean, look at this. I can't blame you for the Henry Ruggs deal. Let's be honest. If they didn't draft Henry Ruggs, the ghost Valdez would raise up and try to haunt that franchise for 100 years. There was no way they were not passing on the fastest guy in the draft. So we knew that was going on that. Arnett was a question mark to me. I think he was better set for being a nickel cornerback. I knew Ohio State fans were just like, Arnett went in the first round? Are you kidding me? I wasn't a big fan of that pick, and it's showing it right now. And then this past year, we talked about the Alex Leatherwood pick. I knew draft guys were telling me, hey, plan on drafting Alex Leatherwood in the third or fourth round because, like, hey, you could get a good value for him. He'll be a guard in the NFL. But they drafted him to be the right tackle. So that was a head scratcher. But, I mean, that's the Raiders. But think about this, Brian. This is the past last year of the picks they got for Khalil Mack. They traded Khalil Mack, a top player in the NFL, and you look at all the picks they gave up for that, or they got for him, and they really got at the end absolutely no value in it. So we could talk all the day about, hey, trade a great player and you'll get all these picks. This is an example of, yeah, you can trade a great player and get all these picks, but you do nothing with it. It's terrible. And you look at the Raiders, it's like, oh my goodness, you had a great player, and you didn't get anything halfway close to what that player is.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And we're going to transition from what you just said to potentially the best value pick you could get in all of the NFL, maybe. Maybe it's an exaggeration, but I think Justin Herbert at number six wasn't even the top quarterback taken, obviously. Had an 80.1 grade. He was one of the top, not one of the top, but he was closer to like the top 10 to 15 in terms of grade. So that changed the dynamic of the whole franchise because they went to that season with Tyrod Taylor as their quarterback. And that was kind of the, here we go, until someone decided to stab Tyrod Taylor in the wrong place, which threw Justin Herbert into the lineup and set the Chargers franchise, I think, ahead by a couple years doing where they thought they were going to be. I want to know, is this team doctor in the Ring of Fame? Or what do they do to compensate him? Because they have to thank him somehow that he is the reason, and his mishaps, malpractice, whatever you want to call that, he's the reason why they gave the Chargers fan base hope. And on top of that, fantasy football people that drafted this quarterback in the end of the draft or paid $1 in auction drafts, you found a franchise stud quarterback. So.
Really? We're going to give him the Mo Lewis treatment? Is that what we're doing for him?
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, let's move on to what they did this year. They took Kenneth Murray, the linebacker. He was the 23rd pick. He was about average. This was their second pick last year they had. I think the trade was with the Patriots. The Patriots moved out of the first round. The Chargers came back into the first round to get Kenneth Murray. His first year, he was about exactly average in terms of grade. Wasn't terrible. And then this year, I think, is what I just absolutely loved. Getting Slater, once again, I said it before, I think Slater could have arguably been the top offensive lineman in this draft, and they got him at 13. So when you talk about which team did the best in the AFC, Alex, I think it's the Chargers. What do you think?
They're up there. If and we're just knock on wood, if we're talking about Herbert, and Herbert is as good as he was last year, let's just say he doesn't get better. He's just as good as he was last year. It's still, he's still good enough to be a top 15, 10 quarterback. That's still a good pick. And then you look at Rashawn Slater. I really wish my Cowboys had thought about taking him, but I thought he was one of the best tackles out there. I mean, we talk about the claim of fame of him is, he took on the rookie of the year the previous year and shut him down. So I think they got their franchise tackle and their franchise quarterback in two straight drafts. You can't get better than that. Those are two most important positions in football, and you knock them out the park, and hopefully Slater is what we think he is. You knock those two out the park. I mean, that's a cornerstone piece that you can have for the next 15 years. So you can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. And if you look at the Chargers, just on top of what we just talked about, they improved their offensive line. Eckler's healthy. They added, they got Jared Cook when they lost Hunter Henry. They get Derwin James back healthy. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. He's never been healthy. I don't think I've ever seen him healthy since Florida State. But you get Derwin James back, and you get to see what happens. And then you got Asante Samuel Jr. in the second round. Like, the Chargers have a lot to look forward to outside of being in the same division as the Chiefs. But, hey, you can still make the playoffs as the second-best team in your division. You got that to look forward to at least. So, I just think when we go through everything, maybe I could argue the Chiefs have the best – past 2 years in terms of utilizing their top end picks and turning it to value, or maybe could say the Chargers did. I think those two teams are probably the best out of all of the AFC. But yeah, that's everything I got. So that wraps up all the teams in the AFC side. So just we recapped the news and the rumors and the AFC side. So I think here in a couple another week or so, Alex, we'll do another recap. And what we're gonna start doing, guys, is we're gonna start breaking down kind of teams' off seasons and doing some predictions of where we think teams are going to finish, and then start getting some fantasy football, the good stuff. We got 90 days before the season starts. Obviously, drafts are going to happen probably in the next 60 days. So I think we're going to start pushing and focusing on fantasy football. So sound good with you, Alex?
Sound good with me. Let's get this football season cranked.
All right, so thanks for joining us, guys. Episode 22, Sports Talk for Fans by Fans. Check us on the Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you guys next week.